Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay, reporting Rachel. From the Pepto room.
You're from the Pepto room. I see it right there. I see the Pepto room. Are those real flowers right there?
Nah.
They're not. They're fake.
Yeah, they're
remember
fake.
Remember the plant that I bought, Oscar? Remember him?
Oh, my God. What happened to Oscar?
So Oscar was bringing too many bugs into the house, so I had to get rid of Oscar and put him outside.
That should not be happening. What y'all got going on
there? Well, no, Oscar was like having bugs come in, and they were getting on Oscar, so I put Oscar outside. Oscar had a very rough patch, but I'm bringing him back now. Oscar is green.
Wait, Oscar doing he never thing. Left?
Well, no, he's outside.
Oh.
And so we can get some sun out there, but Oscar's like, at first, I'm not gonna lie, out of sight, out of Oscar mind. And then like it was like it's a living thing. So you gotta take care of it. I would let that happen to Bozeman, so I have to take care of Oscar.
Not the same, not even close to the same thing. Okay. One has a soul. Now, question. Wow.
God damn.
I'm not a good plant person. And mind you, now I'm in a place where there's a bunch of them. But question, did you get Oscar before or after you won an Oscar?
Oh, it was before.
So we manifested this.
We manifested it.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I totally forgot about Oscar.
That's why you got to keep him alive. You know what I mean? Got to keep Oscar alive.
Okay, sure he's not hope.
Yeah, he's...
You know what I mean? You know, like, it's not, we're not keeping hope alive here.
Got to keep Oscar alive. Got to keep Oscar alive. What'd you do this weekend? You know, people have said that this is their favorite part of the podcast, the beginning banter of the podcast.
But you know what? I appreciate that. And I'm glad that Thought Warriors like it, because I feel like we used to do this in the beginning and then we kind of lost our way, as people seem to do on the journey of life. And now we've come back to, what's us.
Yeah.
But what I do this weekend, I had a crazy weekend. What a crazy weekend.
What's a crazy weekend?
Busy. I moved, and then as soon as I moved, I had to leave the next day, go to Miami on a Saturday. So moved on a Friday, went to Miami on a Saturday, landed at almost midnight, worked all day Sunday in Miami, and then flew back Sunday night, and then had a 7:30 a.m. live hit that I had to be ready for. I'm tired, y'all.
Rach, Jesus Christ, Rach.
But can I say that, like, this is one of my most favorite parts of the day? Like, I look forward to coming on here and doing this. Like, this keeps me sane. Maybe not Van in particular, but this space keeps me sane.
Rach, do me a favor. Try lazy. Just try it.
I got a mortgage now. Oh, I can't say no to anything. True. I can't say no to anything.
It's very true. What did I do this weekend? I got back on my super eating healthy grind. Super. Ridiculously healthy.
You know what? Do you cook or do you do a meal plan?
I cook.
Brian has this great meal plan. They deliver it like twice a week. And he like sticks to it. 3 meals a day. You should hit him up about it.
I want to be like Brian.
Just trying to help you with your eating. Not saying you got to be like Brian. It's tough to cook all the time.
I don't need
anybody
that.
Got time for that.
I don't need that as my metric.
I said the food service.
Nah, man. You said, hey, you have that little muscle on the side of your waist. Nah, I don't need that as my metric. I don't want to be like Brian. You know what?
What?
You tell Brian to be like me. How about that? You tell Brian, you know what? I'm not, because it's just as impressive, right? Me getting like Brian would be just as impressive as Brian getting like me. That's going to be so funny.
I'll tell him tonight.
Me and Brian should just switch places. I wonder who could get there faster. I wonder if Brian could get to like 280
faster.
That's
a great question.
Or if I could get to, because I've been Brian, but Brian's never been me. See, that's the difference. That's the difference.
So you might have just answered it.
I haven't been that lean. I've been lean as fuck, but it's different. It's different. I just hung around. I ate right. I lost from Thursday to Monday, I lost 6 pounds.
Jeez, good job.
Yeah, I'm doing my thing. I don't give a fuck anymore. It's happening.
Actively
Black.
You.
I have a deal with this clothing line, Actively Black. Everybody go look up Actively Black. I'm gonna start like
come on,
documenting my journey. Yeah.
So we're in Oscar mode here, right? The road to the Oscars. Oscars is Sunday.
Right.
Can you believe it's been a year, Van? It's been a year.
It's been a year.
I mean, Oscars was later last year, but it's been a year. Wow.
It's been a year.
Wow. Y'all, remember when he tried to be like, I don't really care if I win, you know? Yeah. And then capture him crying, holding the...
I cried. It happened.
And as you should have. It's huge.
I lied.
Anyways, so I'm watching movies leading up to the Oscars. Have you seen all the best picture, best...
Yes.
Best... Okay, I have not. I watched Coda.
Jesus Christ.
I can't even talk about it without getting emotional.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And if you guys have not seen Coda, please go see it. And I say emotion because it's just such a beautiful movie about family and love and sacrifice and growth and just hope. I just love it so much. I was on the plane and man, I started off with just the tears. And next thing I knew, like my body, because I was trying to like hold it in. And I was like,
Rachel.
The flight attendant goes, are you okay?
What about the part where she's singing?
Spoiler alert.
And her. Okay.
No, that's the first time I cried. That's the first time.
It was so fucking nuts.
Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about it. Spoiler alert. Yes.
By
talk
the way,
about the scene.
I'm not going to ruin it. Because it's too.
There were three times.
So, like, and then, like, and she's. It's just so tough. Like, Kalika will sometimes watch a sad movie and it'll, like, ruin her. Like the day is shot.
What's this one? I gotta talk to her about Coda.
Like the day is shot. And like I come in and like I come back from somewhere and she's watching Coda and she's into it. And I'm like, fuck it. This Saturday's nuked. She's gonna be sad. Whatever Coda triggers is like is sad. But then I have to watch it, of course, because you know, Oscar time. It's a great movie. Great movie. Shout out to Marley Matlin, who's had a great
career. Gosh. There are three the moment you're talking about the concert. The moment where he's listening to her sing with his hands, touching her.
Because he,
yes. And then when she, during her audition.
Yeah, it's tough.
That was me on a play.
Coda's so good.
Oh, gosh, y'all, please. It has to win Best Picture. It really does.
Oh,
I watched that. I mean,
The Power of the Dog is right there, too.
Well, we don't have it. Next time, we can talk on Thursday. We can talk about, or Friday, we can talk about what we think will win. We can do that. Because right. I don't have the list in front of me.
Right. Power of the Dog is right there, too. A lot of people are saying Power of the Dog. But yeah.
Can't wait for the acceptance speech.
Good. Yeah. She's like the Power of the Dog, Jane Campion is up there. She's like, I know what it's like to work really, really hard to win an Academy Award. Not like those guys from Moonlight. They basically want that's Jane Campion. Well, wait, Jane Campion's cool. She just had a white woman moment.
That's what you have to call it. That's exactly what it was.
She had a white woman moment. White people have white moments. What's the biggest white moment you feel like? Have you ever had like a sorry?
Yeah, come on.
I wonder what kind of soup he's eating right now. I wonder what his favorite soup
Shut
is.
Shut up.
He's somewhere right now. He can't afford. He's probably eating well, yes.
What's your moment?
I know a moment. Well, I worked at TMZ, so there were so many moments. There were so many moments where people, but like the one moment, I told you guys about this, the moment where Harvey put the poll on the website he asked whether or not black people should be called African Americans or niggas. That was a real poll that went up on TMZ's website. You guys, listen. Once again, I'm going to tell the story.
So
we got Suge Knight out.
So bad.
They asked Suge Knight, African American or niggas. I don't know why. It was because of that guy, Adam Sandler's friend, had said it. And then he had said Suge Knight let him say it. He's like, to me, nigga is more of a thing than African American. Harvey then took it and put it on the site. Should black people be called African Americans or niggas? I remember I got a call. I'm like, yo, niggas was like, what the fuck, man? What's going on up there? I was off work. I didn't even see it.
Oh, so they did it on your day off?
Well, probably... it's not like they did it on my day off. It's not like they were, but like I was off. You know what I mean? And I wasn't in the newsroom at that time. So by the time I saw it, it was on the site. And I came back in. I'm like, yeah, guys, obviously, this is a fucking no-no. What the fuck? Crazy.
That's definitely your moment. Did they take it down after?
No.
Like, it lived. Well, it lived so on the site.
It might still be up. So what they would do
is... What was the percentage?
I gotta go.
What was the percentage, man? Oh my God.
It might still be up. It might.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It can't.
It might still be up. Well, I don't know if it's like, hold on, let me see. African.
It just can't.
TMZ, African American on niggas. Hold on for a second. TMZ, African Americans or niggas. Hold on, let me see what comes up.
It just can't.
Poll, TMZ. Should black people be called niggas or African Americans? News1.com. TMZ Suge Knight inspired poll. This is December 17th, 2013. This is literally, I'm literally there for like a year and a half. TMZ asked if black people should be called the word African American. Think about how wild this is. What the fuck? See the poll results below. So the video they put it on private, the post has about 370 comments, and most of them are as racist and ignorant as one would expect. So you can't see it anymore because I guess it's not on the site anymore, but it lives on because it got covered. It got covered. TMZ. Damn. Nuts. Oh, here it is. No, wait.
What's the poll? Oh,
no, they took the poll out. They took the poll out, but it's still
probably
there.
Because of what was winning.
Suge Knight is offended when people call him African American because he's not African. On the other hand, he doesn't have a problem with the word nigga. Suge says it's offensive to label all black people African American. Blah blah blah. Who gives a fuck? At first, his theory sounds a little shoppy, but maybe he has a point. I can't wait till my book comes out. I'm sorry, you guys got to read it. It's a TMZ chapter.
So is this, wait, there's a TMZ chapter. Do you think you're going to make people upset?
No. Because I was very democratic.
Did Legal have to check with TMZ? They had to. They had to check. Legal had to check with The Bachelor. You didn't have to talk to an attorney about certain things in your book? I did.
Right. Maybe we'll be sued, but they'll have to sue Hachette, not me. Maybe we'll be sued, but like this is it's just, but even that though, think about this, and this is Uncle Tom stepping fashion man. Even that though, I took that up. It's they white. They just need somebody. Would something like that happen? Here's the thing: something like that would happen, and I would think this is the more reason that I should stick around.
I totally understand that. You think if I leave, first of all, you think what was happening before I got there, and if right. I leave, what will happen? I get that.
Right. This is the more reason I should stick around. And Nina had been there before me, and Nina left literally within the first 6 months I was at TMZ.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that soon.
Yeah, I didn't work with Nina for maybe about half a year, not even a year. And I remember when Nina left, I was like, oh shit. But I was like, why would she leave? I was like, why would she leave? And think about it. The amazing, glorious, great Nina Parker, a mogul.
She's great.
She's great. Nina Parker, a mogul, right? It's been 11 years or something like that. 10 years almost, maybe more since she left TMZ. She's got her glow up, doing her whole thing since she left. It's tough. It's a tough situation. But that was the biggest, I guess, white woman, like white.
Did they replace you with another black person?
Not really, but there was people already there, you know, that were coming up.
Because I used to say that, I was used to be like, y'all want me to stop talking about stuff, just bring in another black person,
another nigga,
and like that's literally like they don't need me. They have another black person in there. Who? I don't want to be there, but
who is the black person that they brought in? Tayshia?
Michelle. Michelle's I left that podcast. Now Michelle's the new host of the podcast. Michelle's podcast. Oh, I love Michelle.
Oh, we want people to win. We want people to win.
Oh my gosh. I love Michelle. Like, Michelle's really do.
Michelle's great. You don't like Tayshia, though.
That's not true.
You don't like her. We all know it to be true. You know. But Tayshia not black. So they couldn't have recorded, you know. She's
Did she tell you that?
It's what was implied. Very controversial interview. I could have gone a lot harder.
That actually was a very controversial interview, and people were upset with some of the questions we asked, which I thought we were extremely nice. Extremely nice.
This is what I'll say before we move on to another incredibly controversial topic. I want people to understand about that interview. Let's do it. We know what we should do. We should have a segment. I haven't suggested a new segment in a long time.
I already know what you're going to say.
What segment do you think we should do?
You're going to say where we go back and redo interviews.
Redo interviews like a higher learning rewind, where we go back and look at something that we already covered and pick apart.
I like it.
Yeah, and see if we'd have covered it the same way. And just go back and look at some of the moments, like watershed moments in the podcast, a higher learning rewind.
I like it. And listen, Thought Warriors, put out what some of your favorite interviews are. and we'll other than Michael Rapaport.
Right.
But no, I think that you would do some things differently maybe in that interview.
Maybe.
So that would actually be a good one.
So if I was just thinking about it right now, and I got to say this, where I'm from, black people are not trusting of black people who other themselves. I'll just be honest with you.
Okay.
If we all sitting in a bullpen, not a bullpen, because I don't want to say that we all going to jail. If we all sitting down on a bench, we all sitting down somewhere, and you look like you look, I look like I look, Tayshia looks like Tayshia looks, we all look around, and we all accept that we're all black, and then for some reason you go, wait a minute, I'm not black, I'm this. We, right
absolutely.
Or wrong, are inherently distrustful of, like, why I don't want to be a nigga.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Excuse me, not a nigga. I'm sorry. Why don't you want to be a black person? Like, why you don't want to be one of it? Like, what is it? Like, what do you are you looking to be as less black as you can? Do you feel like that's going to get you something? And, you know, it's not fair to people like Tayshia, but it's just a kind of a thing. Maybe you need to do better. Who knows?
No, it's a real question, and we should ask. Come back after, have conversation.
Tayshia, come back. Tayshia, finish delivering the soup to Soup Kitchen, because I'm sure he has a different. Could you imagine if, like, a different bachelor contestant every day delivered him the soup?
Stop, get off it. But you know what? If we have her back, maybe we should have Camille on as well.
Yeah, we should have Camille on.
We should have them both on.
We should have a...
Then she's got somebody like more... It would be like us and them.
You know what's funny? This is a fucking fantastic idea. Like, I don't... She would never do this, but this is a fantastic idea that we should litigate the Camille being black thing. We should have her back on. I know the higher learning audience, they're going to ask for D1 to come back on. They're going to want us to take a sort of a different tone right there. Okay, on the other side of this break, the big deal.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Okay, Leah Thomas has become the first transgender woman to win an NCAA championship. I'm sure you guys heard about this. She absolutely dominated. She took control of the final 100 yards with the 500-yard freestyle to make history Thursday as the first transgender woman to win an NCAA swimming championship. Okay. Leah Thomas started her career at Penn as a male swimmer. Or should I say, she had not transitioned yet to being a woman.
Right.
Okay. She transitioned, I think it was maybe like a year and a half ago. She was still identifying, she was still a member of the men's swim team. And she was in the 400s in terms of where she was in terms of being in the NCAA swimmer. That's where she was ranked. Now, she's the best. She's the best because she reclassified. She joined the women's swim team at Penn after she came out. And she has been taking hormone therapy, I think, for around a year and a half. She's met the NCAA requirements for her to be able to swim. Now, a lot of people are looking at this and saying that this is absolutely unfair. That Leah Thomas has had a biological and physical advantage over the rest of these women, and this should not have happened. I'm sure you're up on this story. Rachel, what do you think? Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
It's tough. It's tough because my initial reaction before I knew that when Leah was competing on the men's team, that she was ranked 400, 300, 200. I've heard all those numbers, but not top 10, not top 100. And then I learned later that when she transitioned, she was at the top. But I didn't know that at first. So originally when I heard it, I thought, okay, like if she's competing within the NCAA rules, then what's the big deal, right? Like she's a woman, she's competing on the women's team. That seems fair to me. Then I learned about the ranking. Then I learned about the difference. Then I started listening to other athletes who are in competition with Leah speak out. Then I heard from other female athletes, even outside of the sport. And so I'm in this place. And the reason I hesitate is because I am not a part of the community, the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm not a collegiate athlete, never was one. So I'm not directly impacted by it. So it's hard to have an opinion when I don't feel like I can really speak on it. But I have to say, if I'm just looking at it, it doesn't seem fair. And it's not that it doesn't seem fair because of what her ranking was when she was on the men's team versus now. It doesn't seem fair because there doesn't seem to be a rule that can apply to make it fair for everyone who's competing in this sport. That's more so. I don't see the NCAA coming up with a rule that makes everyone who's competing feel comfortable. And that's what I struggle with. You can't have a blanket rule and you can't observe people on a case by case basis. That doesn't seem fair either. Treating each person like they're an experiment and I gotta monitor you and you gotta be testing all the time and doing this. That doesn't seem fair either to the trans man or trans woman. So I'm not gonna say as far as saying that, you know, like they should not be able to compete in sports. I would never say that. But when it comes to this case specifically, it doesn't seem like the rules match what's happening with Leah Thomas. And it's specifically when you pull out things like the other athletes who were knocked out and did not make the team, did not make the finals, did not make the big cut because Leah did. It does seem as if there is a certain unfair advantage. And it just doesn't seem like the science has caught up with the rules.
Huh. So the last thing you said is probably to me, it's not fair, you know, and I say that as compassionately as I can say it. I think the way that it will become fair is that if we continue to have conversations about what is fair. And I think mm-hmm. that is where we need to be right now. Leah doesn't have anything to be ashamed of.
No.
She adhered to the rules the way the rules
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
She doesn't have anything to be ashamed of. It would be gut-wrenching if you were one of the other ladies who feels like she got an unfair advantage. So mm-hmm. let's listen to some people on this. Okay, Michael Phelps, he knows a little bit something about swimming. He was on CNN not too long ago. And he spoke out on the topic.
I mean, look, like I'll say, you know, I can talk from a standpoint of doping. You know, I don't think I've competed in a clean field in my entire career. So, you know, I think this leads back to the organizing committees again, because it has to be a level playing field. I think that's something that we all need, because it's like that's what sports are. And for me, I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know what's going to happen. I believe that we all should feel comfortable with who we are in our own skin. But I think sports should all be played at an even playing field. I don't know what that looks like in the future. But it's hard.
Huh. Okay. So interesting that that's Michael Phelps, Yale transgender swimmer Isaac Hennig, who actually beat Leah Thomas in January, recently spoke about the controversy and offered the other side of the argument. Check it out.
Things that I always come back to is an athlete like Michael Phelps, who we can all point to and say, yeah, he has twice the lung capacity of any one of his competitors, but no one was upset or, you know, calling it unfair. If you're going to point to those things, then your conclusion has to be, well, yeah, they were built to do sport, you know, or they were built to swim. It's not about puberty, because anyone can go through any sort of hormonal change and still not be a great athlete, because there is just so much more to great athletes than hormones.
All right. Martina Navratilova, who obviously Martina Navratilova. I could say her name in the past. Martina Navratilova weighed in on it and was absolutely direct. Says that Leah should not be able to compete, and this is completely unfair.
Well, it's not about excluding transgender women from winning ever, but it is about not allowing them to win when they were not anywhere near winning as men. The solution perhaps for now is to swim in a lane. You can compete, but you don't get the medal because the rules are not correct. But right now, the rules are what they are. Maybe put an asterisk there. If she starts breaking records left and right, Leah goes to the Olympics. Because she's hitting her prime now physically. And in the future, maybe it should be an open category for everybody, and then biological females.
So let's litigate this real quick. Isaac says that in this particular situation, that certain athletes have certain advantages. And he pointed to the fact that Michael Phelps has an advantage because of increased lung capacity. We all know that to be true. Within sports, the playing field is not equal. It's level.
Sure.
And there are two different things. There's the equal playing field would be everybody is 5'10", 195 pounds, and does this. And let's see who has. That's not it. It's a level playing field, meaning we all qualify under the same thing. Mm-hmm. For example, boxing. They try to level the playing field in boxing as much as they can by having weight classes. You would not have a heavyweight, which I am, boxing against a 147-pounder. You wouldn't have that, right? Now, within the 147-pound division, there are, of course, differences in talent, differences in reflexes, differences in stamina, the ability to take a punch, all of those things, right? The question is, does being born male, having the chromosome, whatever it is, make it completely out of the question after, because I guess I was wrong, I misspoke earlier, Leah had been transitioning since 29. She began her transition in 2019, so it's a little over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is that too much of an advantage in order to compete with women?
Does
being born biologically male, is that too big of an advantage to be able to compete against other women? I'm going to be honest with you here.
Okay.
In my opinion, this is not fair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really feel like it's hyper controversial that it isn't fair. I think it brings up a lot of questions. It brings up the questions that we have in terms of the differences between men and women's sports. in and of themselves. You know what I mean? You know, if you compare men and women sports across the board, in most sports, you'll see the men performing in a different way because physiologically, men are different than women. Men are different than women physiologically. The question is, in order to make sure we have a place where trans kids, trans adults, trans Americans can compete and not feel like they can express themselves in the world of sports, how level of a playing field can we make it? Can we make it a level enough playing field where it can actually be fair? Because if it's not, then I want to make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about. We're talking about then the potential of having women's sports dominated, perhaps dominated by trans athletes. And there are a lot of people who say, hey, it's women dominating women. Fine by me. It is women dominating women. Trans women are women. Right. But how do we get to a point to where without pitchforks and without fire that we can have a conversation about this that actually dissects the actual issue? That it's not like, hey, you know, it's not fair. Fuck off. And hey, like I'm a woman. Let me compete with everyone, even though I have a clear physiological advantage over them that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So we all got to grow up and put our big boy and girl pants on this one. We really do. And we have to be unafraid to have the conversation.
Well, and I think that the most damning evidence in the Leah Thomas case is what she placed when she was competing on the men's team versus what she placed competing against the women's team. Now, if you just look at that, okay, like you can't deny it. Now, if you want to take Isaac's point of view, that's right? It's Isaac's. And which we should point out is a trans man, but is still competing on the women's team because she has not gone through the transition. She stopped.
Right.
We should acknowledge that. If you take what she's saying in regards to Michael Phelps, then it's like, okay, Michael Phelps has twice the lung capacity as, you know, a regular swimmer. Is that what it is? Is that what this it is? He's got twice?
He's got bigger lungs. Yeah.
Bigger lungs. Okay. Then break that down in Leah Thomas's case. You know, does Leah have bigger lungs? And then it's like, okay, well, she's got this type of, you know, physiological advantage. It's not because she's transitioned to a woman, from a man to a woman. I literally think you have to break it down like that. Because if you can't point to something else, then logically, when you break it down, what else are you going to point to? When you look at the numbers of what happened when she was on the men's team versus when she was on the women's team. And I really, that's why I say that's the most damning evidence, I think, when it comes to this as to why it appears unfair. Because we've seen what happened in one instance, and we've seen what happens in another. And you can't deny that. But then it also seems very unfair to start, you know, subjecting trans men and women to these case by case tests and them constantly having to test every 6 months or 3 months or a year or whatever it may be, or putting them in a separate lane from everyone else. And now you're not acknowledging, you know, who they are. It is very complicated, but I think that you can't just say, well, they're a woman or they're a man. It can't be that simple when you look at a case like Leah Thomas. It just can't.
This is my fear. So you get people on this, and we seem to have drawn a clear moral line in the sand between two groups of people in this country. Mm-hmm. On one side, there are people who are willing to fight for equality, fight for inclusion, fight for an ever-expanding definition of what it means to be an American.
Mm-hmm.
These people are on one side of this line. These people are willing to have uncomfortable conversations. These people are willing to advocate for people who they don't really understand. These people are willing to go forward with love and try to, brick by brick, build an America, all right, that everyone can see themselves in. On the other side of this line, there's another group of people. That other group of people seems to be a group of people who believe in the American status quo to a degree, where they want to tell you everything you can and cannot do while you're in this country. They want to tell you what you can do with your body. They want to tell you who you are. They want to tell you where you can go. And I think we know very clearly who those people are. Mm-hmm. Those people take instances like this.
Yeah.
Where the lay person looks at this and says, that's obviously not fair. And they weaponize this issue.
Right.
They weaponize it and they make it a very, very easy sort of political sacrificial lamb to show everyone just how crazy we all are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We have to be braver than they are insane. And right. It's very, very tough. We have to be braver than they are crazy. And it's hard because in certain situations, in dealing with things that are this complicated, it's not always going to end up the way that we thought it did. And mm-hmm. we have to be unafraid to actually say that. In this particular situation, it might be a case to where we go, okay, we're going to get to what's right, but this particular situation, this is obviously not right. We obviously have a ways to go in order to understand how this is going to be done in a holistic way. But mm-hmm. we have to be brave, meaning we can't get the pitchforks out for one another. We have to be able to talk, ask questions, and we have to accept the information that we get back, right? And yeah. I think that's the real exercise of this particular situation. The real exercise of this particular situation is not about them. For one time, I don't agree. Now what? Now what do we do? Do we figure out who's right and who's wrong? Is there a right and a wrong?
No.
Or do we need to work together to establish what right is?
That is. It's the purpose behind it, right? The purpose isn't to say that they can't compete. The purpose is how can we come together to get it to a point where it seems, to use your word, leveled for everyone. That's the purpose. That's the motivating force behind it. It's not a right or a wrong. It's how can we get this to a place where the rules catch up to what is going on in, you know, in society or in sports or whatever the issue may be. That's the goal. But yes, when the other side picks it apart and uses what you might have said in this conversation or me to their advantage, they're missing. They have a totally different purpose and motivating force behind what it is that they want to do. And I think that's how you have to look at it. And I think one of the biggest, most important things you said is in none of this is Leah Thomas's fault. She's doing exactly what she's supposed to. She's working within the rules. She's being true to herself and working within these rules.
And we should say that the NCAA has been very vague and sort of feckless on their rules for competition here. They've punted this several times. They came out with new guidelines not too long ago. Those guidelines just continued to kick the situation to the individual sports and then to the actual individual agencies and then all the way up to the Olympic agencies that will govern the entire sport at the Olympic level. The NCAA seems to not want to set guidelines that make this an issue that people have clarity on. Because, let's be real with you, it's quagmire. It's a powder keg, okay? Something that is very politically charged. It's socially charged. And it's delicate. What we wanted to do here was make sure that we had somebody on the podcast that could speak to the issues and to the feelings of the transgender community on this. And we have Raquel Willis joining us on the other side of this break on Higher Learning, transgender activist, all around fantastic human being.
Yep.
Raquel Willis will be joining us and we're going to ask her some of these questions. And hopefully we don't get canceled. You know, we might. We'll see what happens. All right. On the other side of this break.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Okay, so we are talking about Leah Thomas, and we will be hard-pressed not to have a member of the community on our podcast today. And we are blessed to have Raquel Willis, who is a Black transgender activist, writer, and media strategist dedicated to elevating the dignity of marginalized people, particularly Black transgender people. Now, when I read that right there, that's like a lot. That's a lot to live up to. Do you ever feel any pressure about, like, think about it. You're dedicated. You're in the fight. You know, like, I have something that goes Van Lathan, part-time ally. That's as deep as I get. You know what I mean? But for you, like, it seems like that's taking on a lot. Black transgender activists, we know that our trans brothers and sisters are under attack in America. So the first question I'll start off with is, how are you doing?
I am doing okay. You know, it's Women's History Month. We're like a week or so out from Trans Day of Visibility. So it's a good time. It's a hectic time. There are a lot of conversations like these that I'm having and a lot of things that I'm working on. But I feel great. You know, I think one of the things people always assume when I come into the room bringing my full self as a Black trans woman, oh, your life is just tragic. You know, they don't even consider us as anything but a hypothetical. And it's like, no, I'm okay. I just like had a late lunch. That might've been the struggle today. But you know, I have family that loves me, that cares about me. I have friends and community. You know, I was out at a play the other night. You know, I have a life outside of, you know, kind of being this like social justice like pillar, I think, for other people.
Wow. Yeah. you know, often, you know the thing about that is, why don't I get that? Because I have to say that to people too. Sometimes people will hit me up and they'll be like, Van, did you see this injustice that happened? And I'll be like, bro, it's Sunday. I'm chilling. like I'm not this guy. Anyway. So Leah Thomas, we're talking about the fact that Leah Thomas won NCAA swimming competition. And that has really ignited a debate in America. A debate in America about what's fair for female athletes in terms of competition against, how do I say it? Competition against trans women athletes, right? Would that be the way to say it? Now, the reason why I'm being so particularly delicate here is because I, like a lot of people, look at the Leah Thomas situation and at first, when I see it, I go, well, that doesn't seem fair. But the purpose of having the discussion on the podcast is really in this situation to get to what I and so many other people might be missing when we have these discussions. That's why I'm glad that you're here today. Tell me, what am I missing? For anyone who thinks that it doesn't seem fair, what am I missing?
I mean, I think we're missing a lot. So I would even back up. I actually think the trans sports conversation is one that people lead with, particularly people who know that they don't like trans people. They lead with that one with the general public because they know that it's so convoluted. They know that there are so many different ways that we inhabit our bodies, whether you are trans or not trans, which we call cisgender. So I think backing up and understanding at the heart of a lot of these conversations around fairness and equality for trans people is, are trans people really who we say we are? And so when we talk about trans women, if you can't even respect trans women as women in the workplace or as women in your family or as women in your community, then yeah, it's going to be a jump to understand that trans women should be able to compete with other women in sports.
So it's like, I'm so, so happy you're here to have this conversation and to break it down, because sometimes, and I'm sure a lot of what we call our listeners, thought warriors, might feel this way as well, is, you know, it's such a, as you said, convoluted topic where I feel like, can I even speak about it? You know, I'm not a part of the community. I'm not an athlete in that sense. I mean, you know, let me tell you, back in the day, you know, Big Rage got around on the track in a basketball, shopping fan on the track. But I was not a collegiate athlete. And so I feel like, do I even have the right to speak up? So even before I get into that, what would you say to someone like me who comes to you and says, like, can I even speak to what's going on? Like, can I have an opinion? Sometimes I feel uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like any other conversation that you might be having about a community that either you're not a part of or that is on the margins. I mean, it's like white people saying, like, should we be discussing like the racism that, like, this is just on my mind because I just saw King Richard, but that Serena and Venus experienced in sports, right? I don't know that I would be comfortable with the average white person having a conversation with a white person on a podcast.
Hell no.
Without, you know, the input of someone who's actually a part of the community and who knows what's going on. So I understand people's fears. And I think particularly for other Black folks, it's like, well, you also have to understand that that is the same excuse that like white people use to not engage with race, right? To not engage with the differences that we may experience. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that fear is real. It's valid. And also I think having these conversations are so key, but, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist, so I'm not about to hop on a podcast and have a conversation about neuroscience without having some conversations behind the scenes first to see where things are, to understand things, and to also Google and do my research, right, first. And I think that that's where we have a lot of these problems, is that a lot of times the people who talk about trans issues in the news or in politics don't actually know trans people, haven't actually read anything that trans writers, journalists, authors like myself have written, right, have not consumed authentic media from us. And so they're just kind of out there pontificating with no like lifeboat to fall back on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So let me tell you what my fear is. And I mentioned this earlier when we were breaking down the topic on the podcast. My fear is that this is the bullshit burden that marginalized people have to deal with sometimes. My fear is that this issue, just, it's such a binary issue to so many people that it normalizes this talk of the assholes, right? I think what we all want in America is an America that's equitable, an America that is that where we have equality, where everyone can live who they are, be who they are, and that they're accepted and celebrated for that. Not just accepted, but celebrated for being who they are. When people see an athlete who was in the 400s as a male swimmer transition into a lady swimmer and then win the NCAA championship, they right away go, that's not fair. They say a year of hormone therapy or whatever it is can't undo the scientific advantage that you might have through puberty. And that, to me, then it comes back, it to me, it others sometimes our brothers and sisters in the trans community, because then it starts to look like, hey, these are people, Americans, who only care about their agenda and don't really care about the fairness of institutions that have been around for a long time. And it sometimes fuels it. And if we don't talk about it, then we can't get into the nuance of how we go about this and how we go about this inclusion and bring everybody in. The reason why I say that is, like, for someone that says it's not fair, for someone that says that shouldn't happen for some of the female athletes like Martina Navratilova, Diana Nyad, that say that's not fair. That should not be happening. Are they right or wrong?
Again, I think that is a convoluted question. I think everyone's bodies are different, right? So let's be clear. Prior to my medical transition and hormone replacement therapy, I wasn't a good athlete then. Uh-huh. And I'm not a good athlete now. So I think that we have to consider that what makes someone elite is it's different. It's not always the same for each person. Now, I will say I completely understand why folks will look at this and kind of side-eye, like, what is going on? Because there has been some murkiness with what's been considered the standards around hormone levels, right? Like notably, some of those standards have shifted for different athletic bodies versus others. That was a big thing, obviously, with the NCAA, was like, they opted out of shifting the rules for Leah Thomas to compete.
They punted on it.
Right, because they were already in the middle of a season and that would have been unfair, right? So I think obviously on either side, they would have gotten a backlash. I think what we have to consider is this is a particular case. Leah Thomas is a particular person. And I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to profess to be a scientist and know, you know, the ins and outs of what their barometers or things are. But I will say with hormone replacement therapy, a lot of the general public discounts the kind of changes that happen physically and medically for a trans person, because I just started CrossFit like a year ago. And I will tell you, even though I'm also older than I was, obviously, at the start of my medical transition, I am not as strong as I once was. I cannot carry as much as I used to be able to carry. But I will say, I'm not saying that that's the experience for every trans person. That is just my personal experience.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it in hearing your response to what Van's question was, it does seem like you're saying things are kind of on a case by case, or that this is a particular case, but we are seeing this being addressed even not just on the NCAA, but also in, you know, if people are starting to have these conversations in high school and junior high when it comes to sports. And so I'm wondering, and I don't even know if you have this answer, but what should be done, because it doesn't seem like applying a blanket rule is going to work if everything is done on a case by case basis, or if each case is different. You know, would it be offensive if there were certain categories? And I think Martina was the one who said, you know, there should be a category for biological females and then an open category for everyone else. Like, would that be offensive? I don't know if that sounds ignorant to ask that, but I think that's something that people might be wondering.
Yeah, well, I'll just offer, you know, the terminology biological female is one that we consider to be outdated now, right?
Okay.
Because we know it takes a lot of different factors to be considered female. Mm-hmm. Are we saying hormonal levels? Are we saying chromosomal levels, right? And there was actually a high profile case a few years ago with a South African runner named Castor Sonia, who was, you know, a cisgender woman, you know, assigned female at birth, mm-hmm. and had been competing, and they said that her hormonal levels, particularly around testosterone, were too high, right? Mm-hmm. And so what does that mean for them? And I want to note, and I'm coming back around to your question, I promise, but I want to note also that I think we also have to look at the ways that even Black women who are not trans have been treated within the sports world, right? A lot of this conversation that's about fear, about them dominating the sports. I mean, some of those headlines are ripped right out of what, for instance, Serena and Venus went through, what, 20 or so years ago, mm-hmm. right? This idea that, you know, they were so unnaturally superhuman, whatever, they were dominating against these little white women. And I also think that we have to be very clear that there's a reason why overwhelmingly the women who are the most transphobic against trans women athletes tend to be privileged white women. Because for me, as a Black trans woman, I'm looking at the spectrum of hate, and the hate against trans women and trans people, and just that kind of particular misogyny and phobia that trans people face is completely connected to white supremacy. Because there's a certain amount of entitlement there. And so anyone that comes in and that kind of, you know, mixes up the conversation a little bit more is seen as a threat. And I think that that is a lot of where some of this fear is coming from. Going back to the youth, that answer, again, I think it depends on who you talk to. I had a conversation with some young trans athletes like 2 weeks ago. They're amazing. I have like this town hall that's coming out with them. But, you know, there were some who were saying, you know, I as a trans woman really want to be able to play with other girls, right? Or I as a trans boy want to really be able to play with other boys, but they felt so ostracized in some of those instances that they really didn't have any other choice. And then there was another young trans person that was like, I had to find sports that were more gender neutral so that I could feel comfortable and still be able to do whatever I was passionate about. So I think the answer varies, and I hate that I can't give you a definitive one, because I do think that it varies across the board.
Let's say you don't think it's fair. Because I look at the Leah Thomas case and I just, like, intellectually, it just doesn't seem fair. Does that mean that you're transphobic? Would you say that someone that looks at that and goes, well, that's not right? Like, we need to search. And when I say that's not right, I mean that particular case, meaning I don't think that the NCAA is devoting enough time to doing the scientific work to figure out what exactly the threshold should be here. But in that case, going from there to number one, it doesn't seem fair. Does that make you transphobic if you feel that way?
I feel like I'm always like inserting nuance, and I want to be able to give like a definitive answer, but
right,
most people are transphobic, man. Like, let's be real. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people just like out and about, right? Whether it was like, you know, an Uber driver, or it was some guy that like hit on me on the street, or it was like someone at a, you know, at a church or whatever, who looked at me differently and treated me completely differently once they learned that I was trans, or once I told them that I was trans. And we see this time and time again on social media, especially if you're on the Black side of social media. I mean, how many times do we hear people say, or read people say, here's that agenda again. They're coming after us. They're coming after the Black family.
Yeah, the agenda's been going on for years,
real men anymore because they're all trying to feminize us, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those ignorant ideas feed into why someone would be so quick to say, well, obviously Leah Thomas is some kind of op, because because I already don't like trans people, right? I mean, I think that there's a lot of unlearning, which I love, Rachel, you talk about this so much, the unlearning that we have to do around the things that's been indoctrinated in us that we didn't even know was a problem. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, right? I mean, I grew up, you know, in Georgia, in a very Catholic family. You know, there was nothing telling me, really, until I got to college, that, oh, people can have different gender experiences. Oh, people can be attracted to different types of people. I didn't get any of that education, right? Like, those, I learned who I was, unfortunately, from being called a sissy first, right? Or being told I was just like a girl. And I think for me and a lot of other older trans folks who've been through that, for us, it's about us having more of these conversations so that the next generation of folks, Gen Z is identifying more as LGBTQ than any previous generation, that they don't have to deal with the same kind of hate that we dealt with along the way.
Amazing. Raquel Willis, you have a debut memoir coming out. Look, it's interesting in the way this is written. It says Raquel is currently working on her debut memoir. Now, listen, the reason why I say that's interesting is because can you come back with a sequel from a memoir? Can you do multiple?
You could have
is that
a part
true?
Two. I think you could have a part two.
I didn't know that, like, you could have multiple memoirs that you could that you could have multiple memoirs.
Okay.
You know, the funny thing is a lot of people conflate an autobiography, which is usually a person's story from birth until maybe death or wherever they are in their life,
right,
with a memoir that typically is capturing a particular moment in their life or time in their life. So this memoir is only capturing really the last, really from like 2013 to 2020.
Oh,
okay.
So it's not capturing my whole life.
So are you going to put...
So it's a prequel this coming. She could do a prequel.
kind of. I imagine there being another memoir that's like my coming of identity. I initially started the project wanting to tell kind of a more typical coming of identity story. Like I've transitioned and da 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 da. And I still think that there's a place for that. But after George Floyd happened... And unfortunately was murdered, and there was this social justice awakening, I was like, oh, you know, the narrative that we haven't really discussed is like, what has it been like for a Black trans woman who is an activist to be a part of all of these different movements over, you know, this era of like Black Lives Matter or trans visibility? I don't know anyone else who has kind of written about that. And I think that that would seem more interesting.
Very.
Huh. Yeah. That actually left me with one more question.
Okay.
One more question.
You make me nervous, man.
I'm sorry. It left me with one more question. This is the question.
Okay.
You just mentioned George Floyd. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned the fact that you've showed up in situations where Black people have been in peril in order to force the establishment to change the status quo. Do you feel like Black people show up for your plight in that same way? And I'm not meaning to generalize.
No,
I'm not meaning to generalize. Do you, you've shown up for George Floyd. Do you feel like the community by and large shows up for you?
Well, you know, I think even baked into your question, I know you don't mean this way, but even baked into your question is that, you know, as a Black trans woman, I'm outside of the Black community.
Right.
And I think that that is where a lot of our people come from. You know, they don't inherently think of Black LGBTQ people as a part of the Black community, which is a problem. I think that when I consider the Black community, I like to just lay down the context. I don't think that the Black community is any more homophobic or transphobic than white people. Let's be clear, because overwhelmingly, the people trying to pass anti-trans or anti-LGBTQ legislation writ large are white people. Black people ain't got time to literally organize in that way that white people tend to. So that is a thing. But I will say, I think that our community has particular hangups around gender and identity that are historic. You know, I think Black men and Black masculinity, I think that there is a truth that they have been demonized. And I don't think you would find any Black feminist, Black woman, Black queer person or trans person who would ignore that fact. But I will say we can't act as if patriarchy is not alive and well within our community. And so there's a reason why many more people would organize around a George Floyd than a Breonna Taylor. Yes, eventually Breonna Taylor's story got out there, but it took a little minute. It was not given the same care and attention that George Floyd got. And George Floyd was killed after Breonna Taylor. So let's also remember that.
Yeah.
Not to mention this epidemic of violence that Black trans people face. And I know that that will sound alarmist and sensational to a lot of people who are not privy to this information, but the trans folks who are most murdered tend to be Black trans women, Latina trans women, right? And overwhelmingly, it is at the hands of Black men, you know, Black cis straight men, whatever, whatever. And I do think that part of the issue there is we need to be giving more spaces for healing to all Black people. And so that means Black women need more spaces to heal. That also means Black men need more spaces to heal and find a healthier masculinity. We talk a lot about toxic masculinity, but what is the healthier masculinity that lets Black men know, oh, they can experience fear without having to get angry and violent about it. They can experience uncertainty without having to get angry and violent about it. They can experience joy, right? And have a full range of human emotions and not be violent about it. And also they can love who they want to love, and that doesn't make them less of a man. I think that that's also a big part of the conversation.
Right. Absolutely. Oof.
Absolutely.
Right. I just want to say, I don't even have a question. Just thank you for being here. But then also, I we're starting to have this conversation. We've been saying for a long time that we were going to have these conversations on our podcast. And I'm so glad that we're starting to do that. But for people who, you know, need to, not just want to, but need to learn more, need to be talking about, you know, and I just want to say, I love that you don't separate, you know, like the Black trans community from Black people. You said, like, you talk about it as a whole. And I think that that's what we need to start doing as well. So where can people find some resources, some website, find what you're doing out there so we can keep this conversation going?
Yeah, well, I'm really proud of this Black Trans History TikTok series that I did for Black History Month. I really found like a bunch of figures from literally like the 1800s, the early 1900s,
Who
would be considered trans today, right? Who lived as who they are. And I can nerd out about all of this for years, but a lot of the earliest records we have of Black trans people are actually criminal and court records, because a lot of times you would be arrested for wearing clothing that they told you you couldn't wear because of your gender. And I think a lot of us don't know that in terms of the history of the criminalization of Black people. So I would say, look up the Black Trans History TikTok, some amazing books. There's one called Black on Both Sides by a scholar called C. Riley Snorton, amazing book. I would also lift up my sister, Janet Mock, who I'm sure some folks know. Yeah. Her first two memoirs, Redefining Realness and Surpassing Certainty, are amazing. And there's a movie, well, it's really a documentary on Strong Island by a Black trans director named Yance Ford that I would say people could watch that too and learn more. And they kind of talk about their brother who was murdered in the 90s by a white man that he worked with, and the jury was not on their side. So that's a few different things. There's a lot more out there. Follow me. I'm always sharing more resources, you know.
Follow you where?
Oh, just Raquel Willis. RaquelWillis.com. Raquel Willis on IG, Twitter. You know, I try to have it synced up. So.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. All right, you guys, we're going to be right back on the other side of this break.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home.
Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch.
The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed.
And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Raquel was great.
Fantastic. And you know what I like is that she was like, I don't have all the answers. Yeah. You know, I'm sure people come to her all the time and are like, you know, tell me what to do, or, you know, like, how can we fix this problem? And I think the biggest takeaway from what she said is like, we got to talk about it. We have to have these conversations.
Yeah. It's true. I don't do that with white people.
I know you don't.
When white people come up and they ask me how to solve this problem, I always have an answer. The answer is sometimes the answer is like not my real answer. Like, man, how do we solve like racism? You know how we solve it? Stop being a bitch. How about that? That's what you do.
Man, there is some truth into that.
Man, I want to know how we can help out. How can I be a good ally? By getting your head out of your fucking ass. That's the kind of allies I want.
Y'all, just ask me. Just ask me.
Rachel, big stuff happening right now in DC.
Mm-hmm.
Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's day one for a confirmation hearing. She is in all probability going to be the first black lady judge in the history of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody knows what a big, huge thing that is to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they've been coming at her. I want to throw something out here. I saw this. See what you think about this, because you're a legal eagle. You're a legal eagle. Ha ha! All right. Right now, as far as someone who has had public high school, Ivy League law school, Supreme Court clerk, public defender, has been on a sentencing commission, has been a district judge and a court of appeals judge, with all of those things, there is one judge that checks off all of those boxes when we talk about qualifications. Ivy League law school, obviously went to a public high school, which is, you know, a big deal because you want people to be seasoned and with being around the regular folks. Supreme Court clerk, a public defender, on a sentencing commission, a district judge, and in the court of appeals, there's one person. Do you know who that is?
Yeah. Wait, they currently sit on the court?
They're not currently on the court.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about Ketanji.
Wrong. Clarence Thomas. Just joking.
It's like, I know that ain't the case.
it's Ketanji Jackson. So it just seems weird that a sister steps to the door who is overqualified, super qualified, and they paint
her. Is it weird?
Well, not weird.
Is it weird?
Knows.
It's to be expected, right? Like, this is why phrases like twice as hard for half as much come about. Like, you know you got to be at the top of your game. You can't half-ass it when you're stepping into really anything as a first.
She addressed the committee, opening statements. This is what she had to say.
The first of my many blessings is the fact that I was born in this great nation. A little over 50 years ago, in September of 1970, Congress had enacted two Civil Rights Acts in the decade before, and like so many who had experienced lawful racial segregation firsthand, my parents, Johnny and Ellery Brown, left their hometown of Miami, Florida, and moved to Washington, D.C. to experience new freedom. When I was born here in Washington, my parents were public school teachers. And to express both pride in their heritage and hope for the future, they gave me an African name, Ketanji Onyeka, which they were told means lovely one. My parents taught me that unlike the many barriers that they had had to face growing up, my path was clearer. So that if I worked hard and I believed in myself in America, I could do anything or be anything I wanted to be.
You know what? Can I tell you something?
Tell me.
That's beautifully said. Beautifully put. You know why? Besides the fact that she is, you know, way smarter, way more qualified, so is President Obama, so is Michelle Obama, so is everyone that's on that level. You know why that'll never be me?
Why?
Or it could never be me? It's because, like,
why?
They really love America for real. I could tell in her voice that she loves America. Like, she
what
really
is she
loves
supposed
America.
To say?
She's got to love America. Like, people, this is a thing that they don't think. Like, for me, I'm not like a super patriot because I'll.
No, you're not. But what is she supposed to say?
She really loves America, though, for real. She's devoted her entire life to the American process. And sometimes black people don't get credit for being patriots And that's because, let's be honest, we kind of judge black patriots. If like, if you're a black person and you love America, like, you, isn't that like weird?
So, you know what? I didn't look at it as much as like, she loves America. I guess I just look at it as she, as you said, has dedicated her life to people,
right,
and to helping people, which happens to be in this country, America.
Right.
She loves people. She wants people to help people. She wants people, like, she has a talent, a gift where she can be in a position to help people, you know, who look like her as well. And I, that's more of, I guess, what I got from that.
Right.
Then I got like, she's like about to, you know, strike a verse from I'm Proud to Be an American.
I was just thinking about that song. I used to like that song when I was a kid.
Did we all love it?
I wanna stand up.
That was like, the part.
Proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. Well, at least you know you're free. What are you talking about?
And I'll gladly stand up.
God bless the USA. I used to get so into that song. Why the fuck? You know what I'm saying? At least I know I'm free. All my uncles in jail. So they're always there.
Who sings the song?
At least I know I'm free.
It sounds like Bob nigga. Seger or something.
Yeah,
like
he ain't free. They put us in jail, nigga. So
Lee Greenwood.
Wait, good old Lee.
Wait, have you seen Lee?
Let me see Lee. Let me see Lee Greenwood. I bet Lee Greenwood got so many N-words.
Just type in proud to be an American, because I want you to see the same.
Oh, that is not who I would have thought. That's...
Exactly.
That is not who I would have thought that was. He was a member of the National Council of the Arts. He's a Republican, of course.
Of course.
Wow, it was released in 1984. I don't know why I thought that song was older than that. They don't have any. I want to know what Lee Greenwood's controversies are. Let me see. Okay, anyway. You know, so look, wait a minute.
Did you find something?
No, the day before the inauguration of Donald Trump, Lee Greenwood performed at the Make America Great Welcome Celebration. There you go. Lee Greenwood. I knew it, nigga. All right. So, look, the Republicans have come out with their pitchforks against Ketanji. Coming out. This is what Senator Ted Cook, from a Republican from Texas, your home state, has said. She is part of the Democratic effort to abolish the police. Is nominating justices that consistently side with violent criminals, release violent criminals, refuse to enforce the law, and that results in jeopardizing innocent citizens. Now, this is coming from the fact that, number one, she served as a public defender, which is, you know, part of America. People say, hey, you're a public defender, that means you must love criminals. That's what they say. And also, she's been a part of several progressive criminal justice policies. The Republicans never cease to amaze me. One second, the Republicans are, hey, we let more niggas out than anybody. First Step Act. We are changing criminal justice reform in this country forever. And it's Kushner and Trump. Captain Save-A-Hose, we're going to go around to everyone and let everybody out of jail. Everybody that's ever been in jail, we're going to let them out because we're changing the way this goes. But as soon as you get a justice in there who's dedicated their life to really examining these things and talking about sentence reform and talking about these issues on a judicial level, now soft on crime, pro letting criminals out. When I thought the Republicans were taking responsibility and credit for criminal justice reform.
Did you call him Senator Ted Crook?
Cuck. Ted Cuck. Rachel. Do you know what a cuck is? It's not a big deal.
Can I? Can I get the spelling?
Let's guess. C-U-C-K. Rachel, what is a cuck?
Dick?
No. It has something to do with that, though. Okay, so cuck is short for a term called cuckold. Do you know what it means to be cuckolded?
No.
Donnie, do you... No. Hell no. You are not allowed at all. Donnie, do you know what it means to be cuckolded?
Yes, I do.
Donnie, before we get to the definition, Trudy.
Trudy? Trudy already looked it up.
Trudy, do you know what it means to be cuckolded?
No. What is that?
Interesting. You guys go to different websites than I do. Donnie, what does it mean to be cuckolded?
A cuckold is a person who enjoys watching somebody have sex with their significant other. I don't know if it's strictly man or a woman.
I thought that was like voyeurism.
Right. So cuckold is really when, if your woman is fucking another person, then you're a cuck. You're a beta cuck bastard. You're a little beta cuck, little cucky cuck. Cuckold. Let's look at the higher learning word of the week. We're going to start doing word of the week every week. Cuckold. All right. Cuckolding.
No, that's not the words we're teaching our audience.
Cuckolding. Cuckolding is the act in which a man or woman enjoys watching their partner have sex with another person. The word cuckold is based on the cuckoo bird, which disguises its eggs in other birds' nests and leaves them to take care of the hatchlings. Oh, you got cuckolded. So yeah, he's a cuck. He's a beta cuck. He's a cuck. He's a cuck. He's a cuck. Think about it, you little cuck. You know what I mean? You like watching somebody cook
it up. I don't like
it. You don't like it.
Yeah. I don't like the word. I don't like the word.
Cuck of the week.
I mean, while we're throwing out words, like when it comes to what I find most interesting with the Republicans, or at least Republicans like Senator Ted Cruz, is the hypocrisy of it all. Like if you looked up hypocrite, hypocrisy, whatever form of the word you want to use, it would absolutely be the Republicans in this instance. Like nothing matters. There's nothing to stand on. It's just like whatever the day it is, whatever the issue, whatever is going to push forward the agenda, the purpose, the bill, whatever it may be, the person. That is what they're standing on. And it's always going to be fickle and fleeting. It will change the next day, the next week, the next month. Like there's nothing that they hold on to that's sacred, that's value, other than, I don't know, themselves and their own opinions.
They used to be, though. It used to be that way. Populism is something that's become, with the rise of Donald Trump, populism is something that's become a bigger staple in the Republican Party. But it wasn't always that way. There used to be five or six linchpin sort of arguments that you could at least they would talk. Like now it's crazy. Now their president comes in, spends a whole lot. They're for spending for the government, or they're pro welfare. You give billions and billions of dollars to the farmers. Right. Now you come in, you want your Build Back Better deal. They're against it politically. That when the Democrat is in office, they don't give a fuck about the deficit. When the Republicans are in office, they don't give a fuck about the deficit. When the Democrats are in office, all the deficit is one big, huge deal. There's some of that that's political, like life as usual, like political, like politics as usual there. But the Republicans have really, really, really turned to populism in a way that is really concerning, because that means as crazy as their constituents are, that's how crazy they'll be. Mm-hmm. So you govern it from the bottom up. All mm-hmm. right, Maury is over.
Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I thought it had been over. I thought we'd been watching reruns this entire time. I did not know new episodes were being made every single year. I thought we were watching syndicated shows here. Were you aware that Maury's still on the air?
I've never watched one episode of Maury, ever.
Yeah, I definitely have. I've definitely watched a full episode.
Yeah, never.
But you've seen clips.
Of course.
No more. Okay.
NBC Universal executive told Deadline it's canceling Maury at the end of the 2021 season. It's been on 30 years. Shout out to Maury Povich. Maury said he was ready to retire 6 years ago, but he said, and I quote, "I'm so proud of my relationship with NBC Universal and all those who worked on the show. But as I occasionally tell my guests on Maury, enough already," he said. "I wanted to retire 6 years ago, but," Maury says, and I quote, "you niggas wouldn't stop busting off raw." That's what Maury said. I will say this. So there's been a lot of shows that have gotten axed recently. I know there's some talk about whether or not The Real's coming back. Wendy Williams is gone, but the show I think is sticking around. I'm not sure about that. Nick Cannon is gone. Yeah. Nick was doing a great job. Shout out to Nick over there. But
and I don't know if that's, I mean, obviously these are staples that have been around for a long time. I just don't know if that's because of TV, you know? It's newer generation now, but there's still, I mean, but there's still a huge audience that watches daytime TV. Exactly.
Kelly Clarkson doing well. Tamara Hall doing well. Ellen, the end of Ellen is coming. So Ellen will have to resort to screaming at people in the grocery store now. Won't be able to do it on her show behind the scenes. Look, here's the thing about the Maury show. Last thing I'll say before we get to a very serious question. Rachel, there's a hole in the marketplace. I think higher learning should be the new place that you come when you don't know if that baby is yours.
All right. Well, Donnie, let's get a message about paternity tests.
Paternity tests on higher learning. You think I'm joking? I would like to do that here. You know, I would like to do paternity tests. There's two things on Maury that I know are there that I would like to do. I would like to do, because there's two things that I like that Maury would do. I would like to do paternity tests and kids gone crazy. I personally think...
Doesn't Dr. Phil kind of do kids gone crazy?
Is that Dr. Phil with kids gone crazy?
Well, no, I mean, like that's like where Catch Me Outside came out, like where you can't control your kids.
Oh, it was Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
See, because I was just thinking that, because I've seen kids gone crazy. They come out, everybody's like, boo. And she's like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, so fuck, what? You want to fight?
You want to catch fuck that's you? It. Fuck you. You want to fight me? I'll fight you. I don't give a fuck. Fuck you. And then there's a fucking drill sergeant that comes out there, and the drill sergeant runs out there. You're starred up. Oh, that's the name of the drill sergeant?
No, I'm just saying, like, he ended up getting his own show. The Bodyguard came from Jerry Springer, remember?
Yeah, but he wasn't the drill sergeant for the Wild
Kids.
No,
but he was like...
I feel you, yeah.
Yeah.
My grandma used to like Steve.
Back in Dallas, they used to do, I believe it was the Ricky Smiley Morning Show that did Paternity Test Tuesdays. And you'd call
that.
And you'd call in. Paternity test. You are. It was Ricky Smiley. You are not the father. They did it all the time. Paternity test what, Tuesdays.
Tell you what.
This show does come out on a Tuesday.
If you ain't never been through that, there's like a feeling. It's only happened to me twice in my 20s. There's a feeling of when somebody's going to say that. Like you get the call. Hey, how you doing? What's up? How you doing? I'm just chilling. Sitting around here. I've been feeling kind of, I don't know, a little off. And all of a sudden, your heart starts beating a little bit. What you mean you've been feeling off? What you got, like a cold, flu, something like that? What's going on? No. Like, you know, it's like sick, like my body. Like, it just feels like, you know, it's just, I know how I feel. It's like, I feel a little different. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. I got to go. No, I got to tell you something. What you got to tell me? No, I got to tell you something. Seriously. What you got to tell me? I know, you know how I said I'm feeling well. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little late. You late for what? Huh? What are you late for? What do you mean you late? You mean you late for class? What you mean? Say it. Say you late. What you late for? You missed the bus? And then, boy, the next fucking X amount of time. I remember that drive. One time I drove to her house, picked her up. The drive to Walmart, you can hear a fucking pin drop. Man. I'm like, is this how I'm going out? All right, very serious question of the week. All right, if you had to be the last person in a sea of other people on Earth, would you rather be the last of your race or the last of your gender? Would you
that
rather
is
be
such a good question?
Would you rather be the only black person on Earth, or would you rather be the only woman on Earth?
I'd rather be the only woman.
It's gonna be tough.
I need to be. I don't want to be the only black.
It's gonna be tough.
I don't want to be the only black. It's gonna be no. Originally, I was like, oh no, I don't want to be all these men and just me. But I don't want to be the only black person.
That's you saying you would rather, it's essentially you saying you would rather have men as allies than have women as allies.
That's not true. That's how you saw it. That's not what I saw.
Think about it. no Ellen Pompeo. You know what I mean? It's like,
what's your answer?
Huh?
What's your answer?
It's different for me. I'd rather be the only man.
It's a great question.
I'd rather be the only man.
But you know what's wild? When you said the last of your race, and when I saw me as the only black person, I only saw white folks.
Yeah.
For a second. That and like, and so I'm
Latinos.
But like, right. Yeah. Obviously there would be other people of color there.
Right.
But yeah. I just
you'd have have a whole tribe of Jennifer Lopez Puerto Ricans. You know, you'd have your Asian homies, but you made your decision. All right, you guys. We're coming back later on this week. I promise to have an unexpected ally of the week this week. I promise.
Okay.
All right, that's enough. Take the caps off, but do not stop learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
We out.
Bye, guys. Yeah.